The car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered. Like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches. But there aren't, right?
Right. Because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Okay, let's dive right in. Imagine this place, right? Built entirely on pure joy, this feeling of endless wonder. It's all color, laughter, dazzling shows, magic around every corner, or so they promise. But just beneath that gleaming surface, there's this other mechanism, okay, completely different. And it kicks in the second a particular silent code gets triggered. It's not just about safety, is it? It feels like it's about, well, absolute control. Almost invisible control.
What's really fascinating to me here isn't just the sheer speed of it all. It's the invisibility. It's designed. Well, maybe you would feel it, like a subtle shift in the air if you were really paying attention. But you're not meant to see it, ever. It's like this subconscious trigger just ripples through the park system, a silent understanding with no outward alarm at all.
Yeah, and we're talking about the exact moment a child disappears, right inside the park. There's no shout over a loudspeaker, no siren wailing, no frantic, "Have you seen this child?" announcements. Instead, it's this internal, totally silent alert deep inside the park's operation. So it's not a chaotic public scramble. It's a meticulously choreographed and internal thing designed for this seamless switch into like a heightened state of alert, but silent. Totally contained.
Exactly. Contained. And that containment prevents panic, it prevents disruption, and crucially, it stops anyone outside that immediate system from even knowing there is a problem.
Which makes you wonder, I mean, what level of control, what kind of control do you need to pull that off to get this complete unannounced lockdown without, you know, thousands of people even batting an eyelid?
It's staggering when you think about the scale. We're talking potentially hundreds of doors across, what, acres and acres?
Yeah.
All auto-locking. Certain exits sealing up, but quietly and from the inside. And then you have the plainclothes staff. They're trained to just blend in, right? But suddenly they're moving quietly, purposefully, watching everything intensely.
It feels like it has to be more than just people following orders.
Oh, almost certainly. It implies the central, maybe even autonomous system, controlling who gets out, controlling movement inside, probably designed so it can't just be instantly overridden by someone on the ground. It needs to be fast, seamless, tightening the net, you could say, but so subtly no one feels it close.
So imagine you're there. How would you react if that whole vibrant world around you just subtly locked down? Imperceptibly. How would you even know? Or would you just keep smiling, caught up in it all? Today, we're doing a deep dive into this fascinating case where that illusion, that feeling of absolute safety and fun, is maintained by a protocol that's so tight, so fast, most people never have a clue it's even happening. It's like an invisible net cast in milliseconds. But, and this is the really interesting part, it's the whispers from the edges of that protocol, the stories that don't quite fit, the unsettling anecdotes that seem to defy its perfect logic. That's what really grabbed our attention.
Mm-hmm. We'll be looking at how these things are officially recorded, if they even are, how they're handled methodically by the system, but also, crucially, what some of these off-record staff notes, these sort of unofficial transcripts, what they might reveal. They seem to show these little inexplicable cracks in what looks like a flawless operation. It feels like it's about more than just finding a lost child efficiently. It's about some kind of underlying pattern, or maybe, just maybe, the deliberate disruption of a pattern.
Right.
We're exploring these phenomena that, you know, they just refuse to fit into the neat boxes, the clinical forensic terms of your standard incident report. This is a deep dive into that undercurrent, that unseen mechanism that seems to operate parallel to the official one, quietly shaping things inside the park.
Okay, so let's start with the core of it. Let's unpack this this legendary 10-minute protocol, as we understand it from internal notes, staff accounts. When a child vanishes inside Disney World, there's no PA announcement, no sirens, no names being called out, just silence. And the protocol activates, what, instantly?
Instantly. That's the key word. It doesn't sound like someone weighs options and then hits a button. It suggests something automated, maybe triggered by a location beacon, a specific code someone enters, maybe even some kind of behavioral algorithm watching for distress patterns. But it hits the whole park system in real time.
Wow.
And the precision, the sheer pervasiveness of that silent activation, it's fascinating. That silence isn't passive. It's an active part of the response. Usually silence means calm, right? Or maybe nobody knows yet. But here, it's managed. It's a deliberate lack of noise that signals, paradoxically, a massive internal response.
It flips the script.
Exactly. It exploits the trust people have in the place. You assume big trouble means loud alarms, but this uses the absence of public alarm as the alarm signal for the insiders. It's a really sophisticated form of... Well, you could almost call it bureaucratic horror, where the procedures themselves, the lack of announcement, become part of the unsettling atmosphere just by existing.
Bureaucratic horror. I like that. It speaks to the control, doesn't it? Controlling the narrative, not just the space.
Precisely. Controlling the perception of reality within those walls.
And the engineering behind it. Just think about that. Hundreds, maybe thousands of doors, exit points, across this huge, complex place, all able to lock automatically, seal from the inside instantly. That's not just flipping a master switch. That feels like AI.
It implies something incredibly sophisticated, yes. A central control. Maybe learning, adapting. Think about sensor networks. Maybe subtle facial recognition, looking for panic cues. Maybe RFID and tickets tracking locations. All feeding data into something that can make millisecond decisions for a localized lockdown. It's not just about finding the kid. It's about containing the problem and the perception of the problem. Simultaneously, stop panic, keep the illusion intact.
And then you layer the human element on top of that tech, these plainclothes staff.
Right. Not just your obvious security guards in uniform. It's this whole hidden network, eyes everywhere, blending in, looking like guests, looking like regular cast members. They're the ground troops in this silent sweep, moving with this quiet purpose that only other insiders would spot.
How do they even communicate without giving the game away?
Not loud walkie-talkies, that's for sure. It would have to be silent codes, maybe little vibrations from a device in their pocket, subtle signals, maybe a digital display only they can see, changes color, green to amber. No words spoken that could alert anyone. It's all part of this internal ritual, a procedure for managing something specific, maybe something that happens more than we think, without ever breaking the surface illusion.
So it's not just a plan. It really is a machine, finely tuned, incredibly reactive. The immediate silence, the lockdown from within. It just speaks to this unprecedented level of internal control, containing the situation before anyone outside even knows anything's wrong. It's about managing the problem and the perception.
Exactly. And from a purely logistical view, it is brilliant. It prevents mass panic. It lets the show go on.
But it relies on that trust you mentioned, the assumption that everything's okay unless they tell you otherwise.
It absolutely exploits that assumption. The lack of public alarm is the internal alarm. That bureaucratic horror element again. The procedures themselves are unsettling just by existing, activated in silence. It's like an internal memory loop for those involved. Here's how we handle this recurring thing. Reset perception. Keep moving.
And the truly mind-bending thing. Most guests just don't notice. They're too busy smiling, too caught up in it all.
Well, the environment is designed for that. Sensory overload, isn't it? Sights, sounds, smells. It's all meant to grab you, hold you, keep you immersed in that bubble of wonder.
A distraction engine.
A highly effective one. That constant input acts like a buffer, a fog. It stops people noticing the subtle shifts, the quiet click of a door lock far away, maybe a slight change in the background hum. They're happily, willingly distracted.
Which suggests, I mean, a deep understanding of psychology, right? How to manage crowds, not just physically, but mentally.
Oh, absolutely. A clinical understanding, perhaps. It leverages the pattern logic of the park day. The fun is the dominant frequency, so it easily masks any little distortions, any subtle changes. And this collective pretense is vital. It's not just about finding the child. It's about keeping that facade of perfect joy and safety intact, no matter what. The park's success depends on guests being happy, trusting. So everyone, even those running the protocol, has to act like nothing happened, even if a child was missing for 10 critical minutes.
Which raises a question, doesn't it? What does that do to the people who do notice something, even something small? Or the employees who have to live with that contradiction, the perfect image versus this hidden reality?
It must create a strange psychological space where reality gets bent subtly but constantly just to maintain the illusion. It's a system built on managing not just events, but the memory and perception of those events.
So the real magic isn't the rides. It's maintaining that bubble of unawareness.
Yeah.
It really is a testament to environmental control. Keep them smiling, keep them distracted, and you can run a massive internal operation completely unnoticed. Logistically, it's genius. Protects the brand, prevents panic.
And it keeps the narrative locked down. Perfect safety, perfect joy. That's the story. And the protocol ensures nothing contradicts it publicly.
Here's where it gets really interesting for me. Despite all that efficiency, that silent perfection, these other stories leak out. These whispers from the edges, mm-hmm. employees talking quietly, off-record stuff. These aren't official incident reports. You
won't
find standard forensic terms for them, but they're potent. Like little broken recordings being passed around.
Yeah.
Staff who saw something that just didn't fit.
Well, they're just stress. Urban legends spawning in a high-pressure place. Or is it something else? Because you hear things like one janitor said he saw a boy just sitting calmly under a ride that was shut down. Closed for months. Another employee absolutely swore the girl they found. Different haircut. Noticeably different from when she vanished 10 minutes before. And maybe the weirdest one, a security guard, follows this strange music into a storage tunnel backstage. Finds a kid just standing there, perfectly still, in the dark, singing something that wasn't English. Something he couldn't identify. These are the threads, right? The hints. The contradictions the system can't quite smooth over.
They function almost like parasitic footage in the staff's collective memory. That's a useful way to think about it. The more these stories get told, the harder they are to just dismiss. They point to things that refuse to be contained by those neat clinical reports. The unreliable transcripts of what might have really happened. They hint at the undocumented stuff, that unseen mechanism operating just beneath the surface. And sometimes it seems it breaches the surface, leaving these really unsettling, unexplainable traces.
Okay, let's break those down a bit. The boy under the closed ride. A janitor sees him. Someone who knows the park's guts, presumably. And the ride's been closed for months. Fenced off, right? Maybe partly dismantled. How does the kid even get under there? And then just sits. Calmly. Not yelling for help.
The impossibility is spark. My rational mind also jumps to explanations. Super sneaky kid. Misremembered detail. But the months closed detail combined with the calmness. It pushes back against easy answers. That calmness feels like the wrong emotion at the wrong time. It's deeply unsettling.
Does it suggest a security breach or something?
Right.
Weirder.
That's the question, isn't it? Is it just a physical bypass, or does it hint at something that ignores physical barriers? It feels like a brush with something ambient, something that doesn't just appear but subtly corrupts the space, making the impossible happen. And the location? A closed ride that's significant, too. It's a forgotten space. Outside the park's active illusion. A liminal zone, perfect for something operating outside the normal pattern logic. The calm sitting posture in that impossible place. It resonates with that idea of temporal glitches or spatial anomalies, like a memory loop where things are just wrong.
Then the girl with the different haircut. An employee swore it was different. This one hits me because the protocol is about always safe, returned unharmed. But a different haircut. Even if it's subtle, that's not unchanged. It feels like a violation of that core promise. What happens in those 10 minutes? What aren't they recording?
It's not a different child, which could be explained away more easily, perhaps. It's an alteration, something immediately noticeable to someone who just saw her. And different haircut? How? Cut? Grown? Different texture? Color slightly off? It implies something happened during that time. A transformation.
Or maybe she wasn't alone. Or wasn't herself.
It touches on themes of identity, subtle corruption, not violent, but deeply unsettling. It fits that idea of ambient influence again, something that doesn't confront, but alters, corrupts the familiar. She's returned, yes, but not exactly as she left. It's a quiet kind of terror, something the standard forensic terms just can't capture. And the employee swore it, that certainty suggests it wasn't just a fleeting glance. It was a clear memory distortion that felt real, a subtle change, then normalized by the system finding her safe.
And that brings us to the storage tunnel. Music, darkness, stillness, unknown language. This one feels potent.
Extremely. The music acts as a lure, right?
Mm-hmm.
An auditory beacon, maybe intentional, maybe not, like an off-frequency signal. And the setting, a storage tunnel backstage. Functional, not magical. Utilitarian, eerie. It grounds the encounter in the park's hidden infrastructure, not its fantasy.
And the kid just standing there, still, in the dark, not crying, not running.
Again, that wrong emotion,
yeah.
Motionless, almost posed. And the unknown language, that's the kicker. It defies any simple explanation for a lost kid in, say, Orlando. Where did that come from? What does it signify?
Communication.
Yeah.
Influence.
Something else entirely.
It suggests an origin, an influence completely outside the park's known world. It's like that static on the recording hiding another voice. It feels like the pattern logic itself is breaking through, offering this deliberate, deeply unsettling clue. It refuses conventional explanation. It forces you to consider that maybe everything is part of something larger. A system, a pattern, a test. The child was found, yes. The protocol worked, technically. But the how and the why, they just hang there, like a sealed file you're forbidden to open, resisting the official story.
Okay, so we have these two sides. On one hand, the protocol itself, the 10-minute protocol. Almost every time, the child is found, within 10 minutes. Always safe, always alone, always nearby. You have to admit, that's an incredible success rate, a triumph of logistics, security planning. It works.
Undeniably efficient on the surface.
The main goal is met. Child returned, no panic, park runs smoothly. The weird details, maybe they're just noise, stress, statistically tiny blips. The bottom line is, kids are found fast. The protocol contains the problem brilliantly.
Okay, but contain is one thing, explain is another. And that core statement itself has the caveat, always safe, always alone, always nearby, but not always, right? That little phrase, but not always right. That's the crack, isn't it? That's where the official story phrase.
What do you mean, not always right?
It suggests something's fundamentally off in some cases, even if the child is physically recovered. The very fact these off-record stories exist and persist points to something the protocol contains but doesn't actually resolve or explain. Not always right hints at a deeper misalignment, a reality that doesn't neatly fit back into the box. And those specific anecdotes, the haircut, the closed ride, the strange song, they aren't just noise. They're profound contradictions. They challenge the very meaning of safe or found in this context. If the system is so perfect, why do these anomalies keep happening? What do they signify about what's beyond the system's control or maybe beyond its understanding? That's where the unseen element really makes itself felt. It feels less like solving a mystery and more like resetting a trap, bringing the piece back but ignoring the strange marks on it.
Resetting the trap. And then there's the silence afterwards, which is almost as loud as the protocol itself. Disney doesn't comment. Parents don't press charges. Most don't even talk about it, apparently. And yet the parks just open the next day.
Right.
Perfectly clean, smiling faces, everything in place. Business as usual. To me, that sounds like really effective PR. Maybe NDAs. And, you know, parents are just hugely relieved they have their kid back. Why make waves about something weird that happened but ended okay? Protect the magic, protect the brand. It's pragmatic. Don't confirm, don't deny. Yeah. Keep the illusion going. It ensures smooth operation.
Or is it something deeper than pragmatism? Is that silence just compliance, or is it something more? A kind of unspoken understanding, maybe even a subtle coercion. The complete lack of public fuss, no charges, no lawsuits mentioned. It implies this highly effective, almost too quiet resolution. It goes beyond just a legal agreement. It feels like an erasure.
An erasure.
A collective one. An understanding that something happened that just cannot be spoken about. It's that bureaucratic horror again, but at the final stage. The documentation is gone, the public record is clean, the floor beneath the body is wiped clean, and the fact that the parks open flawlessly the next day, it feels ritualistic. Reestablishing the perfect illusion, covering the cracks, it implies this perpetual cycle, this memory loop where the anomalies are just reset, not resolved, allowing the system to keep brushing against something, unseen, unexplained, but leaving these unsettling marks. It reinforces that total control over the narrative.
So we've journeyed through this deep dive. We've seen this highly sophisticated silent protocol, how it ensures kids are almost always sound fast, maintains the facade. A marvel of control, really.
But beneath that perfect surface, we have these off-record whispers, strange, unexplainable incidents that really challenge what found and safe even mean in that context. The system works, yes, but maybe with unseen costs. Subtle, chilling alterations.
So the question we leave you with is this. Is this just a story about incredible efficiency and discretion in the happiest place on Earth? Or is there something more profound? Something deeply unsettling at play in those hidden moments? Something the perfect system can't, or maybe won't, fully grasp?
Perhaps the real takeaway is simply this. In places engineered for perfect control, perfect safety, there are always edges, frayed edges where the illusion wears thin. And in those edges, the children are always safe, always alone, always nearby, but not always right.
At the UPS store, we know being a small business owner means holiday time is still go time. Still get those orders shipped time. And still re-up on stamps and supplies time. That's why this upcoming holiday, while others close up shop, we'll be open. And happy to help you keep being unstoppable. Come into your local store today. Most locations are independently owned.
Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS Store. Be unstoppable.